Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
All right, welcome back. This is episode 2 of Amuse News. We came back after this successful first episode. We have a really fun one today. I'm going to do a little news at the beginning, as usual, and then I'm going to invite two of my colleagues to join me who are doing an amazing job producing our flagship podcast, Meet in 3. I mentioned this the other day. But for those of you joining us for the first time, this is a show where I am hosting. I'm RJ. I'm the executive director of HRN. And this is a kind of a learning adventure for me through the food world, learning by talking, listening, hopefully more listening than talking, and talking about food and hopefully eating. That's maybe the best part. So this podcast will be live streaming 3 times a week, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And I want to bring you conversations and insights from across the food world, including interviews with chefs and writers, advocates, and then a bunch of people within our HRN network. We have a bunch of amazing, smart people we work with, hosts, interns, our team, advisors, a lot more. There's going to be mandatory fun, as I said on the first episode. So thank you for joining. Okay, so we're celebrating our 15th year, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But part of the reason I wanted to start this show was that this is how HRN started. It was a food radio station where people got on and just talked about food. And I think they talked for hours and hours on end, and we'll try to keep this much shorter than that. But we wanted to kind of keep that spirit alive and bring it back. So this is Amuse News, which is your destination for food news and conversations. Subscribe to the podcast and share it with your friends. I think that would be really helpful for us. So first segment here, the news. So I want to just bring you a few things that are happening that have to do with food. There's a lot going on out there, and I'm just kind of bringing what I find interesting and what we're talking about here at HRN. If you see things out there that you think we should be talking about, let us know and hit up Heritage Radio Network, HRN, on social media. Okay, so the first thing, on Tuesday, we talked about this killing of workers from World Central Kitchen who were volunteering in Gaza. We talked with our guest, Mike, who's a chef who's been volunteering across the world with World Central Kitchen. I hope everyone enjoyed that. If you didn't see it, go back and check out that interview. It's really interesting. But Jose Andres, the founder of the organization, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times. They talked about it on the New York Times podcast, The Daily, yesterday. I just want to read in part what Jose Andres said about his colleagues. He said, their work was based on the simple belief that food is a universal human right. It's not conditional on being good or bad, rich or poor, left or right. We do not ask what religion you belong to. We just ask how many meals you need. And at the end of the piece, he wrote, it's not a sign of weakness to feed strangers. It is a sign of strength. And he talks a little bit about, you know, going back to biblical times. Like, this is something that is so ingrained in humanity and so widespread and should be something that we all appreciate and acknowledge. And again, we're sending out our thoughts to those affected by the tragedy, and hopefully this conflict ends soon. It's a, you know, more and more lives are being taken, and people need food to eat. So that is something that, you know, we're going to keep talking about and thinking about here. I saw a story yesterday, or some screenshots on social, and then a story in the New York Post, which I will not quote, but there is media talking about this story. California has a new fast food minimum wage law, which requires that fast food workers in the state are paid $20 an hour, which is a good step forward, making sure people who work in the industry are treated somewhat fairly. It's not quite a livable wage, but it's close enough, or close as they can get for now in California. But some customers were posting on social media to complain that this pay hike was increasing their food costs. And in one case, a guy posted screenshots at In-N-Out Burger. The cheeseburger price went from $3.95 to $4.10. And this outrageous 15 cent increase, so that the people working at In-N-Out can make closer, but not even quite a livable wage, seems more than fair. But you know, I hope we see more of this across the country. And of course, In-N-Out burgers are delicious, but I think we can pay a lot more for them to give people who make them a little bit more money. So if you see any of those posts, just keep that all in mind. I think 15 cents is fine for most of us. Okay. So we talked a little bit last time about this Dakota Ring podcast episode about kind of the algorithm and how it's affecting the design of coffee shops around the world. And it was making me think about more about the algorithm, as if we need more thinking about the algorithm as a thing. But I saw this article in The Hill about how misinformation in food is really like making us more fearful of our food. And as a parent, I'm drawn to things that kind of talk about like this danger of, you know, what's not healthy for my kids, what is healthy. But I think a lot of what we're seeing warning about the dangers of additives and chemicals and things are driven by this appeal to the algorithm, which is because, of course, this kind of news travels a lot faster than, you know, things that are good for you. So scaring people is effective, as we all know. But there's this article in The Hill, according to Jessica Steyer, who's a public health data scientist. She just wrote that most of these claims of toxicity originate in animal studies conducted using a handful of rats that were exposed to substances at orders of magnitude higher than any plausible human exposure. She just used the example of Cheerios because of the dangers of a plant growth regulator found in imported oats, and that this study like talked about the danger of that in Cheerios, and you'd need to consume more than 80 boxes of Cheerios per day for the rest of your life for this to be harmful. So although we are obviously always paying close attention to what we put in our bodies, and I think we're more aware than ever, it's just a good reminder that a lot of this stuff is information that should be taken with a grain of salt, no pun intended, or at least, you know, considered alongside other information. And we'll keep talking about the algorithm because it's fun. Okay. I wanted to send congratulations to our podcast colleague, Capri Cafaro. She's the host of a show on HRN called Eat Your Heartland Out. She has a new TV series on PBS called America the Bountiful. And the show is going to aim to capture the nation's cultural story by using food as a guide, which is really cool. And it starts this week. And you can hear her talk about this show on the most recent episode of her podcast, Eat Your Heartland Out, which I'll link to in the show notes. So those are just a few things that I'm thinking about today. As I said the other day, if you have ideas for things you think we should be talking about, put them in the chat or hit us up on social media. Okay, so we are celebrating our 15th anniversary here at HRN, and we have a fundraising campaign continuing that is offering people unique food and music experiences in cities across the country. If you donate to HRN and support the work that I'm going to be talking about in a minute with Taylor and H from our team, you can be entered to win dinner for two and two tickets to a concert in the city of your choice. The other day, I talked about Ardmore, which is down the street from where I am. And today, I just want to talk briefly about New York. That is a city that that I visit every week. I'm lucky to be there. And I'm lucky to have eaten at Grey Wind, which is the restaurant that donated a meal for this campaign. This is a restaurant by award-winning chef Dan Kluger. Elevated dining experience in Hudson Yards that creatively highlights seasonal local ingredients. It's a really great restaurant. They have a great beverage program with a focus on small and up-and-coming producers, distillers, and brewers in New York. And adjacent to the restaurant is the bakery at Grey Wind, which has daily fresh baked breads and pastries, salads, sandwiches. And so it's a great place to be and a great place to have dinner. And the music is at the Brooklyn Bowl. If you know about Brooklyn Bowl, then I don't need to say anymore. But my friends at Brooklyn Bowl have offered two tickets to any show of the winner's choice, even sold out shows. So if you're in New York or want to make a trip to New York, you can support HRN and have a great dinner at Grey Wind and see a show at Brooklyn Bowl. Sounds like an amazing evening. Okay, so that is the first part. That's the news. So I'm going to bring out two of my colleagues, Taylor Early and H. Conley. And actually, I'll just bring them out and then we can start talking. Hi, Taylor. Hi, H.
Hi, RJ. Good morning.
Thank you for joining me. We're going to talk a little bit about the production of our flagship podcast, Meat and Three. So, H, you started as an intern and you were an engineer, and now you're helping to kind of run this season of Meat and Three. And Taylor, you're a former Julia Child Writing Foundation fellow, and now you are leading this cohort of interns throughout this 6-month cycle, which is really awesome. You both came into HRN, as I just mentioned, as an intern and a fellow. So I guess, Taylor, can you start and just give me a quick summary of your kind of food journey and what brought you to this field?
Yeah. So I am a deep lover of food. I didn't really come from a family who was focused on food though. And so I've spent the better part of my life trying to figure out what that meant. Why am I obsessed with food? I'm the eldest of five, and my brother closest to me is a chef. And so he and I have a lot of conversations about, you know, we didn't have any family recipes. We didn't really have any, you know, family cooking. We didn't cook with our mom. We sometimes baked with her, but I have been in bakeries more than half of my life. And so I just kind of ended up following my curiosity, and growing up kind of poor in rural New England. It wasn't really an option to go to pastry school. It wasn't really an option to, you know, buy a bunch of equipment that was really shiny. And so I did what I could with what I had. And that had that kind of curiosity and I guess ingenuity or even naivety kind of pushed me to explore different forms of food. And once I moved to Europe, almost 8 years ago, I started tasting different flavors of the diaspora and connected the dots between my own personal heritage and my community heritage. And I realized that food is the entryway point into understanding how to communicate about sustainability, about, you know, innovation, community development. And I just am obsessed with it. I think about it all the time. And so I made my way to HRN in December of 2022. I've been a freelance writer, baker, and educator for the last 5 years. And I started, like you said, with the fellowship. And I'm really grateful that my experience, my environmental education in the States, my education, research, and design graduate studies in the Netherlands kind of came together so that I could offer HRN the best parts of what I'm curious about and be able to be in the position I'm in now.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. H, what about you?
Yeah. So I feel like I, as a kid, was like extremely panicked about climate change from an early age. And I also had the opportunity to visit Hawthorne Valley Farm in Ghent, New York at a young age as well, and saw what a sustainable biodynamic farm looked like. Did summer camp there a few years. And then when I went to college, I majored in environmental and urban studies to focus on like sustainability, and took a class from Michael Spector who's a New Yorker journalist, called The Global Future of Food, who like really emphasized to us how much food is like one of the biggest factors in climate change that we have to focus on and that can be changed. And so I got very focused on sustainable agriculture, especially animal agriculture, and did my internship in college back at Hawthorne Valley Farm in their creamery. And then went on to be a cheesemaker at Beecher's Handmade Cheese after college, where I was for 4 years. And during that time, I was like, ooh, cheese making, so good for right now, but I sure can't do it forever. I like broke my thumb, got really bad tendonitis in my wrist and shoulders.
Like, sounds like my baking and farming experience.
So I, in 2019, 2 years into my time at Beecher's, found HRN and did a HRN internship at the same time that I was cheese making, and realized, I got into podcasts while cheese making, because it's so many hours a day of work where you can listen to podcasts. And I was like, I love podcasts. So I found HRN and was like, look, I can do food and podcasts. And so when cheese making broke my body so bad I had to quit, I did a second HRN internship before going to journalism school. And then after I graduated journalism school, I came back And here I am a year later with Taylor.
Ride or die, homie.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. You know, you're both producers now of Meet and Three, and the word producer is like a, I've been a producer. I maybe still am. I don't know. It's like a, I think it's an idea, right? More
it's
than like
a very, kind of like IBS. Yeah. Sorry, folks.
It's very, it can mean a lot of things, but one thing that I should just say, so we have this group of amazing interns that started in January, and hopefully we'll have some of them on this show. They have all these ideas, and I think, you know, for story ideas, you have like a mix of this is interesting to me, this is interesting to the group, this is interesting to the food world. And they don't always, you know, align. And also because you're putting various segments together, right, to try to create a thematic narrative arc for an episode. So how do you get all these amazing stories? And I've heard so many. How do you get them all into, you know, episodes of a podcast that's really well produced and well, you know, constructed? And how much of that is work that's, I guess, interacting with people and getting them toward the right kind of ideas, and how much of that is actually like the production of the audio?
H, which angle do you want to take?
I guess, I'll start out. We, in our education sprint that Taylor created for this batch of interns, we did a pitching day where we talked about like what we want you to bring us in a pitch and what levels a pitch can be at in terms of readiness. And so like you can pitch us a whole episode, have ideas for what would go in that episode, have like individual stories, but also the guiding like episode idea, or an individual story that you're like, I love this story, I don't know where it fits. And we have this season gotten multiple people who are like so passionate about a specific subject that they're like, I have a whole episode. I have already reported essentially a whole episode, which is rare. But sometimes it happens like that, where an intern essentially is like, I did it. Here it is on a silver platter. But a lot of other times it's bouncing around ideas in the Meet and Three production meetings where it's like, oh, I heard this. You know, we have a sushi chef who's an intern who is like, I am mad about these misconceptions about sushi. And I was like, debunk-isode, who has thoughts of things they want to debunk? And in the Meet and Three meeting, we had like hands galore being like, I want to debunk this, I want to debunk that. And so watch out for the debunk-isode coming eventually.
And to also to that point, we Meet and Three is our flagship reporting show. And it's not that we're not, you know, like the CNN or the New York Times, because we're not. But we follow certain journalistic standards. So we don't slander anybody. We don't libel anybody. But we also infuse our storytelling with a kind of an element of personal narrative. So the person who's reporting has a stake in the story. And so part of the decision-making we have around these types of pitches is, are you the one to tell the story? Is the story interesting? Should someone in the cohort tell it? Is the format going to fit for our 3-minute stories or our 7-minute stories? Because that is a small amount of time to get into, you know, some real world politics stuff. It's actually there's a weird combination of it's a lot of time and a little amount of time. But depending on the tone that we take, and kind of this idea of the gift, what is the gift that we're trying to give the listener? Then we can kind of vet stories here and there, themes. We cover a lot of things like diet culture. We're actually developing a couple episodes about authenticity, which is a theme that comes up often in Meet and Three because we have so many different people coming from so many different experiences. And so taking, you know, an observation of, I saw Girl Dinner blow up all over TikTok. That then turned into a segment on our episode about disordered eating and kind of deconstructing the narrative around eating disorders and who does that affect and is it neutral, is it positive, is it negative. And so we have a really collaborative, democratic way of discussing different topics, different things. Sometimes it's from a silly goose angle, and sometimes it's from a, hey, I read this article and this really impacted me. How can I bring you in to help me share the story of this person? So it's a really interesting process. It's a lot of talking.
Yeah. It's great. And it's so cool to hear all the ideas being thrown around and then how they kind of like get refined and then put into these, you know, these episodes. I can't wait to hear this season. Taylor, this is one of the programs you both came through, kind of different education programs. This is one of our education programs. I talked the other day about kind of how we're expanding all our education programs mm-hmm. to try and bring more kind of storytellers, you know, mm-hmm. into the fold and help them tell their stories in more effective ways. What do you see as like the impact of this work you're doing just mm-hmm. based on, you know, the 4 months or whatever that you've been working with this particular group?
Oh, not you getting me vulnerable on the pod. I started as a fellow and then I transitioned. I'm going to go back and explain. We're going to Tarantino this a little bit, but interns, yeah. We talk about this in this way a lot. I experienced the internship through my fellowship first. And then once I finished my fellowship, I had been supporting and reporting on Meet and Three as the fellow. And then I transitioned to intern coordinator. So I had a little bit more of a hand in the baby bird, mama birding of the interns last year, which meant that I formed really close bonds and I was able to get some really great feedback about the structure of the program and what, if they could have done it differently or if they could have experienced it again, what would they have needed from us as a support staff in terms of their learnings and, you know, just time management and expectations. And so taking all of that information and then being given the gift of, hey, we should not do another internship program. Let's rebuild. Let's slow down. And let's actually figure out a way to take all of the best parts of Meet and Three and of the internship program and the fellowship programs and really, you know, transmute them into something that's a little bit more sustainable because there's no such thing as a podcast emergency. And so what I ended up doing, like H mentioned, not for you, RJ, there's always a podcast emergency for you.
It's a good motto though, to keep in mind.
I probably say it like 6 times a day. H had mentioned this education sprint. So one of the biggest pieces of feedback that we had gotten was they were reporting from the very first day that they had started. And so that meant that they were making audio stories without knowing how to engineer, how to include sound effects, how to actually design the soundscape of, you know, immersing your listener into the emotion of your story. And that frustrated a lot of the interns. And so, RJ, you're gonna have to remind me of the question. I went too far back in the Tarantino way.
No, it's okay. Just like what you see as the impact, and maybe not of this particular group, but what do you hope they leave with, or you know?
No, like thank you. Okay, so and part of that also redesign when I brought on H also to be our journalism educator was that we decided we wanted to infuse the journalistic and the editorial education piece with a storytelling aspect, which meant that we wanted to empower our interns and our fellows to really appreciate their voice, understand the quality of their voice as a tool, and also understand the quality of their personal experiences to inform how they could situate themselves as a responsible and equitable, you know, reporter in food media. And so the feedback that I have gotten has been that a few interns have had a significant change in the actual physical quality of their voice. We had an intern who sounded often like she was going to cry when she would talk out loud on meetings. And that's not the case anymore at all. Mm. We had her in the studio in person at Roberta's on the mic with like amazing quality voice and just the strength in her voice and the conviction. Hearing her on the mic was like, unbelievable. It was really moving. And we also have interns who now feel really empowered to navigate food media spaces as an autonomous professional, picking up audio, you know, contacting folks, utilizing their own skills and their networks to create some like cross-pollination with HRN. And that's kind of my biggest hope and wish and dream for the people who interact with HRN is that they leave us, not really, always stay attached to us, but really, you know, finish their internships or finish their like working relationship with us, knowing that we're constantly a resource, we're always a friend, and that we are a space that is in evolution, and they are always welcome to give us feedback so that they can properly see themselves in us, because we should be a reflection of the shifting food media landscape. Okay, I'm going to end my TED Talk.
No, I appreciate that. Really well said. H, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I feel like I think my experience as an intern and something I've seen from other interns is that HRN is like a real bridge from working in food to like expanding your relationship into food media. When I was a cheesemaker, it felt like there weren't many options available. It was like, I have a confusing skill set. It doesn't make sense. Nobody understands what I know how to do and what I can't do. And like, you know, trying to pitch a freelance article when you like have nothing to show of like, I know how to write words. Yeah. It's you're never going to get picked up.
Yeah.
And for me, I knew that like I wanted something else and I needed a way to find what that was. And HRN was exactly what I needed to be like, oh, I do want to be a journalist. I am going to go to journalism school. I am going to end up like doing freelance writing, producing podcasts. Like these are the things I wanted to do and was like, how can I possibly get there? And HRN was the thing that took me to there. And I feel like that is true for so many of our interns, because so many of us work at, or have worked in production or behind the bar or in front of house, like, and not a lot of jobs are very interested in like, ah, you've been a server for 10 years. Let me give you a chance to write a freelance article. Like,
yeah,
that's not a thing. And so having this be a place where we're like, oh my God, you are a baker. We would love for you to tell us stories. Like that is the beauty of HRN to me. And it's why like a lot of our interns stick around, come back. We have multiple engineers right now who are former interns. And like, yeah, I just think that HRN connects food people to new paths in food that are likely more sustainable than the working in food part of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Really takes it out of you.
H, and you're like the things that you said you wanted to get into, you are now doing.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah.
Award-winning journalist, H. Conley.
Award-winning journalist from HRN intern to award-winning journalist. That's the kind of impact we're creating.
Yeah. And I wrote my senior thesis in college on the farm bill. And I spent a year like dedicating my life to truly understanding the farm bill. And I just produced a 5-episode series with the Young Farmers Coalition on the upcoming farm bill. Like when I graduated college was like, I know all this stuff about the farm bill, but who's going to read my 110-page senior thesis? Nobody.
Me, I want to. Send me the PDF.
I can actually see recently 1,000 people have downloaded it. Not saying they've downloaded it. So, but like how many people have listened to the 5-episode Farm Report podcast that has the voices of like 10 farmers and policy advocates? And like it is, I was like, podcasts are the way that people can get information in their own time in a way that is like accessible and easily consumable. And that's why I wanted to work at HRN, because I was like, I love listening to podcasts and this is the way I want to receive information. How can I get this information I care about to people? Via the Farm Report, which you should listen to. It's out. All 5 episodes are out.
Hi, H is the boss.
they will. And it's inspiring the kind of to see the people who, you know, I just have known via Slack mostly for the past few months, but got to meet a couple last week. But you can see the progress in not only pitching ideas, but also in like those, you know, mini audio postcards they did. And like, mm-hmm. it's you can tell like there's a lot of progress being made really quickly.
It's amazing. It feels really powerful to see the, like, when we get scripts and rough cuts into our scripts and rough cuts channel, it's like, oh my God, they did it. They're doing, they learned. We did it. We told them and they implemented the things we asked them to, and they are producing like really, really high quality stories. I'm so excited for everyone to get to hear what they've done.
Me too. Well, I'm so honored to be the host to share all of these stories this year of me and three and my co-host H sometimes. So
tell us when is the season? There was an episode released today, which I think was from the
season 15 of last year. Yes. Yeah. So we just wrapped up season 15 today, and season 16 will start airing next week, H.
Maybe
RJ.
I think it's 2 weeks.
Next week. Yeah, we have something going up next week. And then we also have a little sneak peek preview behind the internship is our new show. We have three interns who are giving a close look into their experience going through this education training sprint and then now into the reporting, and that will be running concurrently with our Mean Three. So you'll get to hear a little bit about how the episodes were made, which is really cool. First time we're doing that.
Yeah, that's a really great addition. And we will continue when we'll have some of the interns come on here and talk about their experiences and episodes and story ideas. So thank you both for your work. Okay, so let's do quick fire. I'm stealing this from our colleague, Joanna, I think, but what was your last best bite?
Last best bite predates Joanna.
Okay.
Since the Kat Johnson, Katie Goldman, Wadler, and days.
This is the classic HRN question we ask all of our anybody who's ever interviewed for a position, an internship, anything. We always ask, what is your last best bite?
Yeah.
H, what's your last best bite?
So me and my partner have recently gotten very into making fruit curds. Taylor has been hearing my like weekly fruit curd update.
Strawberry one was wild.
Yeah, we made strawberry. So we're finishing off our strawberry curd, and last night made two ingredient banana pancakes. Like we're just like a banana, two eggs, beat it all up. Make pancakes with chocolate chips, spread strawberry curd on top of those. It was honestly a little like, and like every time we discover something this good, I'm like, oh no. Oh, man. But now we know it exists and we can't make it every day. So yeah, last best bite for sure.
Amazing.
Mine is a little bit crazy. So I was just in New York City. That's where we got to meet RJ. I stayed with H, and H lives a hop, skip, and a jump in Kips Bay from, I don't mean to dox you, from the Dominique Ansel workshop. And on my last day in the city, I went and got some treats for myself and my brother. And I am just finishing a twice baked almond croissant now 4 days after the fact. And it is still awesome. I don't know if we can cuss on this program, RJ, it was fucking still good. So shout out to that man doing the Lord's work.
Wow. Four days later. That's amazing.
I was shocked. I completely forgot about it. I found it in the bag. Still great.
That is awesome.
Tell it on myself on international Instagram.
Yeah. Thank you both for sharing that. Okay. So the last thing I want to do, we're a few days past April Fool's Day, but I've been looking at these articles about, you know, so many food brands did like pranks of like, this is a new product, whatever. Okay. So here's a list of six fake things. Mm-hmm. Are there any of these things that you wish were real? Okay. You can both respond. I'll just read through them. Old Bay body scrub.
Yes.
Sriracha mayo toothpaste.
No.
Dole's canned pineapple and ham.
Absolutely fucking not.
Yeah. Ranch flavored Smarties.
Yep.
No. Oh, I hate Smarties. I hate ranch. No. I don't hate ranch. I mainly hate Smarties.
I like both. Let's go.
It could be good. Sour cream and onion soda.
Yep, I'm into it. I love
it.
Okay. Yeah.
And the last one, which I'm not sure about what we're supposed to take flavor wise, but scotch made by scotch tape.
No, that sounds like prison, honey. No.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do that. Okay, so we'd maybe try Old Bay Body Scrub and Ranch Flavors.
I think Old Bay is the winner.
That's the winner. Okay. All right. Last question. Do you have a favorite current recipe that people should think about?
Oh, my goodness. Age, your curd recipe.
Oh, well, we've been really running through a bunch of different curd recipes. I would say that if you listen to the episode of Meat and Three published today, you will get a little peek into how me and my partner cook and his rice cooker lentils recipe. And I will say I've never had better lentils than ones made in the rice cooker. And it is another thing that I'm like, we have to like be very restrictive about how much lentils we make in the rice cooker because I like will be sick. Like I will feeling awful and still like eating lentils because they are so good. Wow. Mainly because, legumes, they can be challenging on the body. But if you are a fan of lentils and have a rice cooker, I highly, highly, highly recommend making lentils in your rice cooker.
I'm both. I'm all for all that.
Recipe is in the show notes. So
look at that. All right. We will link to that episode. Taylor, what do you got?
I'm going to stick with also the same episode. I got to cook butter pasta with one of my favorite people, a former intern, Sasha DuBose, and we had an intercontinental butter pasta cook that is recorded for that episode. And we both, Sasha also had a story about ramen in the microwave, and then I have a butter pasta recipe, and it's a butter pasta recipe for everybody. Everyday butter pasta recipe for everybody.
Wow. All right. Look at that. So we're giving people useful information. We're giving so much info on the work you all are doing. Keep up the great work with the internship program, and we'll be doing a lot more. And so I'll be back tomorrow. I'm going to talk to another host who's starting a new show that will come out tomorrow. So I'll be back tomorrow. Subscribe and follow us if you like the podcast. Thanks, Taylor. Thanks, H. And thanks, everybody, for checking us out.
Thanks, RJ.
Thanks, RJ.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.